UB Live at the National Science Complex of the State University of New York at Buffalo. I'm Dr. Michael Bozarth. The following presentation is a lecture delivered to my Psychology 451 course on drug addiction. The book is titled Fundamentals of Drug Addiction, A Psychobiological Approach. The book is currently in preparation with a spring 2013 anticipated publication date. Students enrolled in the course have access to printed text, study guides, and slides to support the learning objectives. These materials are not yet available to the general public. Sit back, enjoy, and learn. This brief presentation addresses the relationship between locomotor activity, dopamine levels, and affect and mood in humans. It attempts to answer the age-old question of why scientists watch little rats running around in a box. The simple answer is because it sometimes tells us much more, addressing a fundamentally more interesting and important question.
For those of you that look at this and you happen to have taken biopsych and studied locomotor activity even a little bit, Scott Wissinger, I'm sure, would have covered this point. This is locomotor activity. Now, what's the neurotransmitter that's involved in locomotor activity? The one that's the primary neurotransmitter that if you turn it on, you produce increases in motor behavior. If you block it by lesions or pharmacological treatments, you decrease locomotor activity. What's the neurotransmitter? You sure only know a half dozen. Take a guess. Dopamine, okay? Now, what's the neurotransmitter that everybody, even on ABC News, knows has something to do with affect, reward, pleasure systems, why you're addicted to shopping and sex? Ready? What is it? Dopamine. So here's what I want to show you. This figure depicts, and these really depict what would be realistic data. This depicts the effects of various doses of a compound, four different stimulants, on locomotor activity. That's what's being measured. I could just as easily depict on this figure, instead of looking at locomotor activity and arousal, I could look at dopamine levels. We can measure the efflux of dopamine in the nucleus accumbens, for example. We happen to know it's an area critically important in locomotor behavior. And we can measure dopamine levels in the nucleus accumbens. You know what? Dopamine levels would follow this very precisely. In other words, the dopamine would go up and down in the same range of doses to the same magnitude of effects that you see corresponding on these figures, where you see the increased differences between these two different classes of compounds, the efficacy, the potency. Those relationships hold up quite well. Dopamine's interesting, but what's even more interesting than dopamine for a psychology major? Affect, mood, euphoria. Turns out that the dopamine, if you block that, you're blocking euphoria. So the dopamine involved in mood, reward, euphoria, positive reinforcement processes, and so forth. So instead of measuring arousal, you can measure dopamine levels. Put the dopamine scale over here, cross off arousal, or I could put a psychometric, even a pen and paper test, where I measure your affect. How good do you feel? Do you feel a little bit better than usual? Do you feel really good today? Do you feel really, really good, or are you floating on cloud nine? In other words, I could measure something related to affect. Guess what? Affect would co-vary the same way. Now, why am I showing you this? It's the beauty of the experiment. Measuring affect in humans is complicated and difficult. Measuring dopamine efflux is not a real easy thing to do either. Locomotor behavior, a couple of rats in a shoebox with some photocells. So you can measure locomotor activity, which is, it's kind of interesting for a scientist maybe, but you are paralleling what you would predict to happen with dopamine and therefore affect and mood. So in other words, why would scientists watch a bunch of rats running around in a little box? Because we think we're studying something much more important than little rats running around in a box. And if you do something like locomotor activity, you can look at chronic drug effects, compare different drugs, look at different doses. You can do all these various permutations that are really interesting. Like what happens if you put tea in there, theophylline and caffeine combined, instead of just putting in, for example, the caffeine or the amphetamine? What happens if you put in mahjong, ephedrine, and pseudoephedrine compounds? You get activities like this. And the answer is yes, by the way, you do. The theophylline hasn't been studied so well, but ephedrine we studied quite a bit in my own lab group, and you get locomotor stimulation with ephedrine, which is consistent with the locomotor stimulation you get with both nicotine and caffeine. So we'd predict from that dopamine levels would show corresponding increases, and we'd further predict from that affected mood would show similar corresponding increases. In other words, if you do your pseudoephed in the old formulation, that was primarily 30 milligram pseudoephedrine hydrochloride tablets, then you might feel a little better in the morning. It might perk you up a little bit. Not a lot, but a little bit. So if you add that with a cup of coffee, and definitely don't smoke, the health consequences are very, very bad. I do not tout smoking for stress relief in my class, despite what the Wall Street Journal has misquoted me of doing. And the nicotine papers in San Diego now say I teach it. They actually turn that around and say, I teach you how to smoke in class to reduce your stress. Talking about fabrication of information, you have to wonder what else is fabricated. But I know about that one because I'm primarily involved in that one. I don't teach it. Don't do it. But somebody asked me at the end of class last time, are these effects additive? What if you were to smoke and have a cup of coffee? Would those two things add together, caffeine, nicotine, producing more arousal? Yes, they are additive. They may be partially additive, meaning that the increase in activity is less than the algebraic sum, or they may be supra additive, which means that you may get more of a multiplicative effect. In other words, you may get more of a bang out of your cup of coffee if you follow it with a Virginia Slim or a Marlboro, depending on how you want to stereotype the smoking behavior. So you see the relationship now between locomotor activity, dopamine levels, and affect. Those of you that believe in affect-driven models of addiction, which are very popular today, and I'm not saying they're wrong, I'm just not necessarily locked into them like other people are, you can see how locomotor activity or rats running around in a box takes on a whole new level of significance for scientists, why we would do that. As I think I mentioned earlier, we have an entire theory. We call it the psychomotor stimulant theory of addiction. It takes that basic effect involving that basic brain system, the mesolimbic dopamine system, throws in a little Charles Darwin, he should have been co-author on that paper, and puts it back into an evolutionary biology context, talking about drug addiction and why the brain evolved the way it evolved and so forth. That's an old paper now, but it's still being fairly widely read.
These podcasts are copyright 2012 by the Addiction Science Network. They are produced in collaboration with the State University of New York at Buffalo and are provided solely for educational purposes. Podcasts can be directly downloaded from www.addictionscience.net. Transcripts are also available for some podcasts at our website, as are other documents and commentaries regarding drug addiction and select topics on psychopharmacology. These podcasts can be copied and freely distributed as long as the source is acknowledged and provided they are not edited in a manner which changes the fundamental meaning of the selected passages when quoted out of context to the entire presentation. Correspondence from professional colleagues is welcomed and can be sent to info@addictionscience.net. We do not offer clinical services, nor do we usually have time to reply to questions emailed from the general public. When listening, please keep in mind that these podcasts are targeted for academic and professional listeners. Everyone is invited to share any information they find useful, but our target audience is not the general public. Finally, please note that the Addiction Science Network is the sole author of this work, and views and opinions expressed herein should not be construed as official policy of the State University of New York.